بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Well, we could not start sharp 7:45, but I hope we finish sharp 9:30, inshallah. And we were discussing the Battle of Badr, and we went through the provision of the two armies and how the battle, of course, started. About the caravan and about the army. Now, if you remember, I said that when Prophet, peace be on him, decided to change direction, and instead of going after the caravan to go and face the army, he wanted to consult his companions, because of course their number were very limited. They had not come out for a full war, and the facilities they had was very scarce, and therefore some of the companions had some misgivings about going through the battle. So he consulted them that what should we do. As I said, Umar and Abu Bakr, they spoke. Of course, many of the traditions that we hear Umar and Abu Bakr spoke is somehow people think that it's made by Shias, but this is not something coming in our books. It's in all sources that they spoke, they had misgivings. They said that Quraysh is now very arrogant, very powerful, we cannot defeat them, we better not go to the war. And instead, Miqdad and other Muhajirun stood up, and for example, Miqdad said that we are not like the companions of Musa, who when Musa wanted to go to Jericho, they said, Ya Musa, idhhab anta wa rabbuk وَقَاتِلَ إِنَّهَا هُنَا غَائِدُونَ. You go with your Lord, you fight, you run, you drive the people out of the city, and then we come. Well, this is what is mentioned in the Quran. Instead, we say, اِذْحَبْ أَنْتَ وَرَبُّكَ وَقَاتِلَ وَنَحْنُ مَعَكُمَا مُقَاتِلُونَ. You go with your Lord, and we will come and fight with you as well, beside you. So this is what Miqdad said. But what actually Prophet wanted to hear was from Ansar, and I mentioned why, because the pledge that he had with Ansar was that the Ansar would protect him in Medina, would not go out to fight with him, and this was something beyond the pledge of the Ansar, and this is why no matter how many of the companions spoke, the Prophet said, why don't you give me some consultation, and he wanted to hear from the Ansar. Now, the first person who rose from the Ansar to speak was Sa'd ibn Mu'adh, and he said, Prophet, we sacrifice our lives for you. It doesn't matter whether we have this is inside our pledge or is not. We are following you in whatever you say, and other Ansar as well. Now, it's interesting. Of course, the history is always like this. It's written like this. Things which are not favorable to the ambience of that time Muslim culture, they are somehow deleted in a nice way. For example, in Sirat ibn Hisham, if you look at the text, he says that when Prophet wanted to consult, فَقَامَ أَبُو بَكْرٍ وَقَالَ وَأَحْسَنَ. Abu Bakr stood, spoke nicely, and Umar stood, spoke nicely. Then Miqdad stood and spoke, and he said this. He has omitted, of course, what Umar and Abu Bakr said, which has come, of course, in other histories, in other history books. And this shows the pressure which the scholars were somehow experiencing for writing things. I mean, even you can see this in Tabari, in many instances when he wants to mention anything about Ali ibn Abi Talib, he censors himself. And in Hadith al-Dar, for example, when he wants to mention what the Prophet said, that who will give a pledge or who will support me on this issue, at the beginning of the Ba'atha, and on the condition that he will be my brother and my wazir and my wasi and my successor, and he brings it in his tafsir, because it's a hadith, but in his history he says, and the Prophet said, who would support me, ala kada wa kada, for these things. He doesn't mention what things, such and such. And this is not probably a fault of the scholars. It is the pressure of the environment and culture. It's just like if you go to a, say, for example, very, very traditional Pakistani group and say something which is wrong, in their culture. For example, say that Ali ibn Abi Talib didn't know everything. And this is the end of your lectures and everything. So in that environment, in that cultural environment, it was very, very difficult for these scholars to write things which were, of course, against the understanding of the ordinary lay people. Anyhow, after the Ansar spoke and they supported the Prophet, then the Prophet said, "Siru wa abshiru, fa inna Allah qad wa'adani ihda ta'ifatayn." Move forward and rejoice, since Allah has promised me one of the two groups will be ours, either the caravan or the army. By God, it is as if I am watching the places of killing of each of them. And he actually said, Abu Jahl is going to be killed, Utbah is going to be killed, Shaybah is going to be killed, and these are the places where they would fall down. And this was, of course, a great good tidings for the companions of the Prophet. The Quran also says, وَإِذْ يَعِدُكُمُ اللَّهُ إِحْدَى الطَّائِفَتَيْنِ أَنَّهَا تَكُونُ لَكُمْ. Allah promised you that one of the two groups will be yours. You will win. And this is actually the promise that Prophet gave. One of the two groups is yours. Now, one thing that Quran tells us, and history does not tell us very much about it, is that right from the beginning, when Prophet wanted to go out of Medina, when he wanted to go after the caravan, some of the companions were reluctant. They didn't want to go. Not, of course, the Munafiqun, these are the companions. And also, when the news came that the army is on the way, the companions, some of them were so scared that the Quran says it is as if they were being driven towards their death. Nothing had happened yet. And Allah had given the promise of victory, but some of the companions, they felt that, no, this is the end of it. They are going to be killed, all of them. And it's as if they were driven towards the death. This is in Surah Anfal, verses 5 to 7. Even as your Lord calls you to go forth from your house with the truth, bilhaq, means that you knew the truth, you knew that this is from the Lord, you had to go. Though a party of the believers were surely averse, لَكَارِهُونَ يُجَادِلُونَكَ فِي الْحَقِّ. You might say, did companions of the Prophet disputed or argued things against him? Yes, of course, Quran mentions in many places that they argued and disputed things with the Prophet. They disputed with you about the truth after it had become clear. And they went forth as if they were being driven to death while they saw that they cannot do anything because everyone is following the Prophet they had to follow. They felt embarrassed not to go back. And when Allah promised you one of the two parties that it shall be yours, and you love that the one not armed should be yours. And Allah desired to manifest the truth of what was true by His words and to cut off the root of the unbelievers. It means Allah didn't want you to take a caravan. That was not important for Allah. What was important for Allah was Abu Jahl and Utbah and Shaybah and Umayyah. These were important for Allah. Allah wanted to just uproot them. And this is what He did. Now, the Prophet, after this consultation, moved towards Badr. And Abu Sufyan had already, as I said, managed to, in a way, escape from the Prophet. And he sent a message to the army, don't come. I'm already on my way coming. Muhammad could not reach me. And even, no matter how fast they come, they cannot reach me. But, of course, Abu Jahl was very, very positive about it, that we have to go to war. We have to go to war. Even if we don't fight, we go to battle, we stay there for 3 days, and we sing, we dance, so that people come and see us, and then we go back, even if we don't fight. So, no matter how much Abu Sufyan advised them to go back, they didn't. They came. The Prophet came near the wells of Badr, he camped there, and sent Ali and Zubayr and Sa'd ibn Abi Waqqas to the walls to get some news about the Quraysh. And they arrested two men who had come to take water for Quraysh. They knew where Quraysh were, actually, because Prophet wanted to know where the exact position of Quraysh now. They were taking water from the well, and the Ali, peace be on him, and the other two companions, they arrested him, they took him to the Prophet. Interestingly, the Prophet was praying at that time. And the companions started to investigate and to interrogate them. And they said, from which party you are, where are you coming from? They said, we have come from Quraysh. Wow, the companions became very scared. Oh, Quraysh is so close. The army is so close. So they said, no, you are lying. You have come from the caravan. They started to beat them. They started to beat him in a way that they said, okay, no, we have come from the caravan. Now, Prophet finished his prayer and laughed at them. He said, they were telling you the truth. You beat them. They are now telling the lie to you, and you accept it from them. They are from Quraysh. Why don't you accept this from them? And then, of course, Prophet asked them, where is Quraysh? How many are them? They said, we don't know, we are slaves. We don't know how many are in the army, but we know that, the Prophet asked them how many camels they killed every day. They said, one day they slaughtered 9 camels, the other day they slaughtered 10 camels for the whole group. And the Prophet said, so they are between 900 to 1,000. And this is how, of course, all historians have said that they were between 900 to 1,000. This was the estimate of the Prophet, peace be on him. And then he said, who are in the caravan? This was very important. This was very important for the Prophet to know who have come from Mecca. He said, Umayyah has come, Abu Jahl has come, Utbah has come, Shaybah has come, and he named all big names of Mecca. And then Prophet said, هذه مكة قد ألقت إليكم ألفاد كبدها. Mecca has thrown unto you its dearest one. The part of its kidney is a parable I use. Has thrown at you all these. And all these are yours. And you cannot imagine, we cannot imagine, when the news of the death of these people reached Mecca, what an upheaval it made. I mean, it's just as if the old big ones in one's community or society is suddenly gone in something which never one would probably think about. Now, the Prophet moves forward and camps by the wells of Badr. Now, there are a few things here mentioned about the strategy and tactics of the Prophet. First, it is said that Prophet camped by the, because the Badr was a place where there were many wells there. It was a place which was created by someone called Badr, and many wells were digged, and lots of water was there. So Prophet went, it was a big area, and camped by the first well, and said, okay, this is enough for us, we take water from this well. Hubab ibn Munzir, he suggested that it's better to cut off water from Quraysh. And therefore we go and camp just beyond all the wells, and we don't let the Quraysh come and take this. This is of course reported in histories like Ibn Hisham, but it is very, very unacceptable that Prophet ever did this. Because in other instances, the Prophet said that you should not cut off water from the enemy. And in rules of war as well, in rules of the just war, we have that one of the things that people shouldn't do, poisoning the water for the enemy, cutting off the water. And we have the example, very, very clear example of Amirul Mu'minin alayhi salam in Safin. You know that in Safin, when the two armies encountered, the first thing that happened, Muawiyah cut off water from the army of Amirul Mu'minin. And they thought that they are going to die out of thirst. And Amirul Mu'minin said, now you have to go and fight. You have to, there is no other way. You have to get water from them. And they fought, and they drove Muawiyah back, and they took the water. And many companions of Amirul Mu'minin suggested that now we have our turn. We cut off water from them, and Amirul Mu'minin said, no, This is not adjustable. I never cut off water from my enemy, and he didn't. So if Amir al-Mu'minin didn't do that, how come that Prophet would have cut off water in Badr from those kuffar? The suggestion of Sa'd ibn Mu'adh to the Prophet to sit in a canopy as a command headquarter and leaving some fast-running horses with him so that if anything happens, Prophet could go back to Medina. Because although there were all those promises of victory, but really it was unbelievable. I mean, even for the companions who were there, hearing it by their own eyes from the Prophet, that there is going to be victory, they couldn't believe it. And they just said, this is of course nice to say that, but it's not believable that we could overcome this army. So, Sa'd ibn Mu'adh said, sit in the canopy, we'll put some horses here for you, and then if anything happens, there are other brothers of us in Medina, you go to them, and we are killed here. And Prophet accepted. And he sat in the canopy, Arish, and of course, they said that Abu Bakr as well sat with him, which is again very, very amazing why Abu Bakr should sit with the Prophet on that occasion in that Arish, and others fought. This contradicts many other traditions from Amir al-Mu'mineen that Prophet was actually fighting in Badr himself. And Amir al-Mu'mineen says, لَمَّا كَانَ يَوْمَ بَدْرًا اتَّقَيْنَا الْمُشْرِكِينَ بِرَسُولِ اللَّهِ. On the day of Badr, we sought refuge in the Prophet from the Mushrikun. Because at some point the battle became very, very difficult. And he was the most fierce of all in fighting, and no one was closer to the enemy than him. This is reported by Tabari, reported by Ibn Kathir. Very, of course, considerable people have reported this. So, what has come in Ibn Hisham, that Prophet sat in the canopy and he did not fight himself, is not something that we can really look at it without some suspicion. Now, one other thing happened, and that was when the two parties camped. The Quran says that إِذْ أَنْتُمْ بِالْعُدْوَةِ الدُّنْيَا وَهُمْ بِالْعُدْوَةِ الْقُصْوَى وَالرَّكْبُ أَسْفَلُ مِنْكُمْ. This is where Prophet came from Medina. Unfortunately, again, it's very vague. Prophet came from Medina. This is the near side of the valley. It was a huge valley. And عُدْوَةُ الدُّنْيَا, this was the near side of the valley. And this was the farther side of the valley from Medina. إِذْ أَنْتُمْ بِالْعُدْوَةِ الدُّنْيَا وَهُمْ بِالْعُدْوَةِ الْقُصْوَى. Warraq, where was the caravan? Now, Warraq wa asfala minkum. The caravan had already fled. You didn't have any access to the caravan. They had also blocked you from the caravan. And then the Quran says, وَلَوْ تَوَعَدْتُمْ لَخْتَلَفْتُمْ فَالْمِيَاد. Even if you had promised the mushrikun that you would go to fight them. Because if someone promised that I'll come and fight you and they didn't turn up, it was a humiliation. It was a disgrace. Now, Allah says, even had you promised to go, you wouldn't have gone. Because, of course, you would have become very, very afraid of the whole situation. But, of course, Prophet somehow took them by the encouragement of some other companions who spoke in that way. Now, after they camped, the Prophet camped here, of course. The Mushrikun camped here. They were a bit far away from each other until then they came to fight close inside the valley. They sent Umayr ibn Wahab to estimate the force of the Muslims and the hesitation of Quraysh came after Umayr took the news to them. Now, of course, Umayr came. This Umayr ibn Wahab, I have mentioned his name because he has a very nice story later on to listen to. He came. He was a very, very brave man, and it was, of course, in any type of battle, it's very daring for someone to go to the enemy, estimate, and have some sort of information about them or combat. He went and went round the whole army of the prophets, and in a way that no one could catch him. He was a very, very fast horse rider, and he went back. They said, okay, how many are they? He said, they are about 300. I said, wow, 300, we just take them by hand. What sword? What weapons? No weapons. How many horses? 2-3 horses. Wow. This is very easy. We can just, as Abu Jahl said, Abu Jahl, especially when Abu Jahl came and saw the army, and Allah says that we made them even less in your eyes, said, just go and take them, arrest them, bring them by your hands. You don't need to fight them. Now, he said there are 300. However, I do not advise you to fight them, because the men I saw there have come for death, and they would not die before they kill the same number from you. So there's no use going to fight. Of course, Abu Jahl again was very, very adamant that we have to go. And Abu Jahl describes him to be a coward after he says that, and stimulates people to fight. Utbah and his brother Shayba and his son Walid, who were very much against the battle, especially Utbah, who was the commander. Utbah was the commander of the army. Utbah and Shayba were sons of Rabi'a. They were very, very powerful people in Mecca. They were against the battle. And one of the reasons was that the son of Utbah was in the camp of Prophet. Abu Jahl was using that all the time against Utbah. You don't want to fight because your son is there. You don't want your son to be killed. And that made Utbah very angry. He said, okay, you don't need to tell me anything else. I would be the first person to go and fight. And he, his brother, and his son, 3 of the most prominent, they went to battle. Probably you saw that in the film, The Message. From the other side, some Ansar came. They said, who are you? They said, we are such and such from Ansar. They said, we don't fight you. Send people who are to our standards, to our level. And then Prophet said, okay, you come back. Hamza, Ali, and Ubaidah. All of them, of course, relatives of the Prophet. Ubaidah was also a cousin of the Prophet. You go. After they went, they said, okay, now we know. These are Quraysh, we are Quraysh, we fight. And the 3 poor people were killed very easily. Of course, Utbah injured Ubaidah, and Ubaidah passed away on the way back to Medina. However, all 3 were killed. Now, after the 3 were killed, then everything changed. The battle from the single battle became a full charge from the army of Mushrikun, and then of course then the Muslimun started to fight in a very, very, of course, brave way. It is said that one of the companions was eating dates when Prophet was speaking to them, that's encouraging them, go to battle, you will go to paradise if you become a martyr. And one of them was just eating some days, listening to the Prophet. And as soon as he heard that, he said, do you mean the only distance between me and paradise is just to go and get killed there? The Prophet said, yes. He dropped the dates, took the sword and went, and killed several of the mushrikun and himself died. So they were very, very greatly motivated to fight. And also, of course, these people were the people who had tortured many of these muhajirun. And of course, we should not ignore the role of Ali in that battle. In most of the histories, it is written that Ali killed almost 30 of mushrikun. And altogether, 70 of mushrikun were killed. Sheikh al-Mufid mentions that Ali killed 36 of them. In Tabari, he says Ali killed 27 of them. And very interesting thing in Ibn Abil Hadid, he says that when he talks about the bravery of Amirul Mu'minin, he says that in Yawm al-Badr, 70 of the mushrikun were killed, 35 of them by Ali ibn Abi Talib, and the other 35 by Muhajirun and Ansar and the angels who came to help. And so Ali ibn Abi Talib was weighed against all the Muhajirun and Ansar and the angels coming. Now, this story, I want to go through the story from the original source. Did you receive emails from Suhail to bring Quran with you? No, unfortunately, maybe he has not received my email or he has not opened his email, because I sent him an email. He's abroad. Okay, so Anyhow, no problem. I will read and you don't understand. Because if you had Quran in front of you, of course, it would have been better for just analyzing things. Now, the whole Surah Anfal was revealed after the Battle of Badr. And if you just imagine, you have just come back from the battle, and then these verses are revealed to you. Are there Qurans here? They have English translation? Okay. Surah 8, Anfal. Just from the beginning to the very end. Now, after the battle, the first question was, okay, they had gained lots of booty of war. What to do with those booties? How should they distribute it? Did everyone find the surah? Just from the first verse, يَسْأَلُونَكَ عَنِ الْأَلْفَانِ. They ask you about the booties of war. Say, the decision concerning booties is for Allah and the Messenger. So fear Allah and amend that which is between you and obey Allah and His Messenger if you should be believers. Now, you might say, these people who, in a way, sacrifice their lives. 14, of course, not many of the companions of the Prophet were killed. However, others fought very fiercely against the enemy. They sacrificed everything. Now, you might say, how is it possible that they start to quarrel about Anfal? And they did quarrel about Anfal, about the booties of war. And
what booties of war would that be? The caravan would be full of...
No, horses, armors, which were very, very expensive at that time. An armor would have, been a fortune if someone had a full armor, actually. And slaves, of course. Swords, slaves, and all the, and slaves, of course, were very expensive as well, so there were many booties of war there. Now, the question was, why did they quarrel over Anfal? Well, first of all, the level of the companions were different. You saw in the verse, which comes in Surah Anfal later on, that they, at the beginning, they were very reluctant to come with the Prophet. And some of them really thought that they are being taken towards their death, and they were scared to death by going with the Prophet. And of course, some of them did not, Ibn Hisham had that Abu Bakr did not go to battle at all, and he sat beside the Prophet in the Arish. And if anyone was to be saved, it was the Prophet, not any one of his companions. And therefore, you can imagine there were some people who cared about, of course, the booties, and also, well, after the battle is over, people want to distribute the booties of war, they might come to disagreement from each other. Now, this is the first injunction about the booties of war coming to the Prophet, that it's, the decision about it is with God and with the Prophet. And of course, later on it says that whatever booty you have, فَإِنَّ لِلَّهِ خُمُسَهُ وَلِلْرَسُولِ, you have to give homes of it, and then you distribute it accordingly. And it said that after they quarrel about these Anfal, Prophet said, I have no injunction about it and how to distribute it. So he just took everything with himself to Medina, and on the way, these verses were revealed. Yes.
In this matter of faith, when you have the booty and you distribute it, do you distribute the booty for homes before you distribute it? Do you give them homes, or is it upon the individual to distribute it?
No, they take homes first, and then they distribute it. Then they distribute.
Shouldn't it be that the individual has a responsibility as we do it
today? Not in booties of war, no. It's with regard to other things, like, for example, the income and other things. But in booties, no. They took the homes first, and then they distribute everything. And then, of course, it says, إِنَّمَا الْمُؤْمِنُونَ الَّذِينَ إِذَا ذُكِرَ اللَّهُ وَجِلَتْ قُلُوبَهُمْ. The believers are only those who, when Allah is mentioned, their hearts become fearful, and when His verses are recited to them, it increases them in faith, and upon their Lord they rely. Meaning that you shouldn't think about these things much. The mu'minun are this type of people. And then if you come to verse number 5, as it is just as when your Lord brought you out of your home for the Battle of Badr, of course, in truth, bil-haq means that Allah wanted to establish a haq there. While indeed, well, bilhaq means you didn't come out to take the caravan for the purpose of the money or property. You didn't come out to take booties of war. You came out bilhaq, to establish haq. And this is what Allah wanted, of course, from you. وَإِنَّ فَرِيقًا مِّنَ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ لَكَارِهُونَ. While indeed the party among the believers were unwilling, arguing with you concerning the truth after it had become clear, as if they were being driven towards death while they were looking on. And remember when Allah promised you one of the two groups that it would be yours, and you wish that the unarmed one would be yours, but Allah intended to establish the truth by His words and to eliminate the disbelievers. This was the aim, to eliminate the disbelievers, so that He should establish the truth and abolish falsehood, even if the criminals dislike it. Then, of course, there are things described here about the attitude of the mu'minun there. إِذْ تَسْتَغِيثُونَ رَبَّكُمْ. When you ask help of your Lord, and He answered you, indeed I will reinforce you with 1,000 from the angels following one another. مُمِدُّكُمْ أَنِّي مُمِدُّكُمْ بِأَلْفٍ مِّنَ الْمَلَائِكَةِ مُرْدِفِينَ. Now you might ask, these all 313 people asked for help from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. It's not imaginable that everyone sits and prays, اِسْتَسْتَغِيثُونَ رَبَّكُمْ. Therefore we have a history that this is talking to the Prophet. In fact, they say Prophet, when the two armies came together, the Prophet started to pray so long, and so in an absorbed way that his cloak fell and he was not aware of it. And until this happy news came that I'm going to send you 1,000 angels, followed by other hosts of angels, because it said that 3,000 angels were there, as in Surah Ali Imran. So Murdafin means then they are going to be followed by other hosts of angels. And of course Allah made it not but good tidings, and so that your hearts will be assured thereby. It means that it wasn't the case, as there are in many, many traditions. I think there are mythical traditions later on made by traditions, that we saw angels riding horses, they came and they were fighting with swords or with spears, they had imamahs and these things. The Quran says it was just a reassurance for your hearts that these angels came, and also putting fear in the hearts of the disbelievers. And Allah made it not but good tidings, and so that your hearts would be assured thereby. And victory is not but from Allah. Of course, for victory you didn't need the angels. But Allah just wanted your hearts to become firm when you had the news of angels coming. Indeed, Allah is exalted in might and might. And the night before the battle, many of them couldn't sleep because they were frightened. They were scared. I mean, it's imaginable, of course. They were ordinary people. They were scared of the battle. Tomorrow, that's going to be a very fierce battle. However, after the angels came, you felt so secure that you fell into a very nice sleep. إِذْ يُغَشِّيكُمُ النُّعَاسَ أَمَنَةً مِّنْ. When He overwhelmed you with drowsiness, giving security from Him, or because of security that came to you by those angels. وَيُنَزِّلُ عَلَيْكُم مِّنَ السَّمَاءِ مَاءً لِيُطَهِّرَكُم بِهِ وَيُذْهِبَ عَنْكُمْ رِجْزَ الشَّيْطَانِ وَلِيَرْبِطَ عَلَىٰ قُلُوبِكُمْ وَيُثَبِّتَ بِهَا الْأَقْدَامَ. And send down upon you from the sky rain by which to purify you and remove from you the evil of Satan, and to make steadfast your hearts and plant firmly thereby your feet. This verse suggests that actually they did not have water. And in some histories we have that the water was with the mushrikun, and they thought it's a very, very difficult situation. We do not have water. Even in the morning they didn't have water to make wudu. What should we do? And Allah says, we sent down rain. You purified yourself. You drank from it. Your heart became assured that no worry about anything. إِذْ يُوحِي رَبُّكَ إِلَى الْمَلَائِكَةِ. When your Lord inspired to the angels, I am with you, so strengthen those who have believed I will cast terror into the hearts of those who disbelieve. This was the function of the angels coming, working in the hearts of the believers. And then, of course, there are injunctions when you meet an army, do not turn away. Apparently, some of them were weaker. They wanted to turn away, run away, as it happened in Uhud. In Uhud, we come in Uhud. They say, Uthman and one other companion, they ran away to the other side of Medina and hide themselves in a mountain. And they came back after 3 days and they saw the Prophet is alive in Medina. And Prophet told them, you went a long way for security. You didn't need to go that long way. Of course, everyone ran away in Uhud, except just a couple of companions. But Prophet said, you didn't need to run that long. You could have, of course, find security in other places as well. Now, verse number 17. These are interesting because, as I just put yourself in place of those people after the battle, and you did not kill them, but it was Allah who killed them. فَلَمْ تَقْتُلُوهُمْ وَلَكِنَّ اللَّهَ قَتَلَهُمْ. It means that the victory came from Allah, otherwise you couldn't do it alone. And you threw not, but it was Allah who threw, that he might test the believers with a good test. Well, it's very famous. Just before the battle, Prophet took some sand or some soil and just threw it to the army and said, شَاهَتْ الْوُجُوهُ. May you go blind, so you cannot fight properly. And Allah says, you did not throw that, I threw it. And then, of course, they could not see who they were fighting with, and they could not see their situation, they could not find their direction there. And remember, interestingly, this is what Aisha did in the Battle of Jamal, just to imitate the example of the Prophet, and she took some dust or some sand from the ground and just threw it at Amirul Mu'mineen's army, and she said, Shahat al-Wujuh, may you become blind. And of course, it doesn't always work. It works with the Prophet and doesn't work with the wife of the Prophet, certainly. And then there is a argument with the Kuffar. إِن تَسْتَفْتِحُ فَقَدْ جَاءَكُمُ الْفَاتِ. You wanted Allah judge between you. And this is the judgment. If you seek the decision, well, here of course, fat has two meanings, victory or judgment, a decree. But here, because of the story, it's a decree. Because Abu Jahl on the day came in front of everyone and he said, Allahumma aqta'ana lirrahim. Anyone who is worse to their family, who does qat'ur rahim. وَأَعْتَانَا بِالْحَدِيثِ. And anyone who has brought innovation, you kill them. And in a way, he did istiftah, said, you judge between us, Allah. Between us as Quraysh and between this man, Muhammad, who has brought all these funny issues in his eyes. And then Allah, well, of course, Abu Jahl was killed, everyone was killed, but there were the backbone of the mushrikun. Says, if you wanted a judgment, this is my judgment. You wanted anyone who is more qati or rahim to be killed, now you are all killed. وَإِن تَنْتَهُ فَهُوَ خَيْرٌ لَكُمْ. And if you desist, it is best for you, but if you return to war, we will return and never will you be availed by your large company at all, as you did in battle, of course. And then there are, again, rebuke for the mu'mineen, for the companions of the Prophet, that you did such, you have to listen to the Prophet all the time. And of course, it's very good if you go through the whole surah. It's all about the Battle of Badr. And here, of course, verse number 41, وَعْلَمُوا أَنَّمَا غَنِمْتُم مِّن شَيْءٍ فَإِنَّ لِلَّهِ خُمُسَهُ وَلِلرَّسُولِ وَلِذِلْقُرْبَ. And know that anything you obtain of war booty, then indeed for Allah is one-fifth of it, and for the Messenger, and of course, explained very clearly. This is after the Battle of Badr. And then it says, إِذْ أَنْتُمْ بِالْعُدْوَةِ الدُّنْيَا. When you were on the near side of the valley, and they were on the farther side, and the caravan was lower in position, then you just had fled away. If you had made an appointment to meet, you would have missed the appointment. But it was so that Allah might accomplish a matter already destined. And other things in that battle happened. إِذْ يُرِيكَهُمُ اللَّهُ فِي مَنَامِكَ قَلِيلًا. When Prophet had a dream before that these mushrikun are coming and they are going to be killed. And many people had dreamed about it. Atika, the daughter of Abu Talib, sister of Amirul Mu'minin, she was still in Mecca. She had that dream that someone is coming from Medina saying that Abu Jahl is killed, Umayya is killed, and Rabi'a, Shayba is killed, Utba is killed. And Abu Jahl said, well, another prophet from Banu Hashim, we don't need you. Don't talk about these things. And after 3 days, of course, the man came and said exactly the same thing, that Abu Jahl is killed, Utba, Shayba, Umayya, they are all killed. And also Prophet had a dream about it. Now, in the dream, he saw this army to be a very meager army. And he said, we are going to fight a very small group. A very small group of people. إِذْ يُرِيكَهُمُ اللَّهُ فِي مَنَامِكَ قَلِيلًا. When Allah showed them to you in your dream as few, and if He had shown them to you as many as they were, then you would have lost courage and would have disputed the matter. Even then that the number were few, they disputed in the matter. Now, what about showing them in that number? But Allah saved you from that. Indeed, He is knowing of that within within the breath. Now, there is a theological issue here, and that is, does Allah make things shown to be shown to the prophets in an unreal way? Is it permissible that Allah shows unreal things to the prophets? This means, إِذْ يُرِيكَهُمُ اللَّهُ فِي مَنَامِكَ قَلِيلًا, that, well, in a way, you receive something wrong, or we reveal to you something untrue. And this, of course, has caused lots of theological questions. Any answer? This is verse number 43.
If you talk to the angels and the Muslims, they'd be more than the Muslims.
They would have much more than them. Yes, that's true. And it doesn't, from other aspects, the whole millions of people, if they want to fight against God, they are very little, isn't it? They are very meager. جُنْدٌ مَّعَ الْغُرَانِ جُنْدٌ مَّا هُنَالِكَ. They are all smaller. When Allah talks about Fir'aun and his army, it's just a small army against us. Yes.
You mentioned before that when in the dreams we always see the reality. And in this case, if you saw the thousands, it was not a bit, it was just apparent. But the reality was...
That's the reality. Yeah. That they were very, very small. I mean, if they had come to fight against Allah, they are very small, they are very meager. And this is why Prophet saw them to be. In fact, the Prophet saw the truth of the matter. Not the number of the people, but the truth of the matter, that they were a very, very small group of people. So, also the other thing, وَإِذْ يُرِيكُمُوهُمْ إِذَا الْتَقَيْتُمْ فِي أَعْيُنِكُمْ قَلِيلًا. And when He showed them to you, when you met as few in your eyes. Also, another thing happened. Allah worked in your eyes. When you saw them, you thought, well, they are not more than 100 people. And when they saw you, وَيُقَلِّلُكُمْ فِي أَعْيُنِهِمْ. And when they saw you, they thought you are just a bunch of a dozen of people. And that's why Abu Jahl said, just go and take them with hands. And why Allah did so? لِيَقْضِيَ اللَّهُ أَمْرًا كَانَ مَفْعُولًا. Allah wanted this battle to take place. Then you thought that they are very little, we can go and fight them. They thought you are very little, we can go and fight them. And then, of course, when the battle started, things changed. They saw you as twice their number. And you still saw them very little. And in this way, your courage remained. And what all these verses want to say is that the battle of Badr was not won by people. It was won because of the victory of God, because of those angels coming, putting all these things there. it was something Allah wanted to have, because that was the most decisive moment in the history of Islam. And of course Allah wouldn't have let things to go out of His hand at that moment. And also verse number 47, do not be like those who came forth from their homes insolently and to be seen by people, as Umayyah said, as Abu Jahl said, we go, we camp in the bath, we dance, we sing, people come and see our might, and we come back. He says this is just to show things to people. Don't be like this. Don't come. ولا تكونوا كالذين خرجوا من ديارهم بطرا. بطر is just for leisure, for pleasure, having pleasure. وَرَآءَ النَّاسِ وَيَصُدُّونَ عَنْ سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ. As Imam Hussein alayhi salam said, إِنِّي لَمْ أَخْرُجْ عَشَرًا وَلَا بَطَرًا. I have not come out of Medina of putting fight against the Aziz for pleasure. This is something that I think is important. One other thing happened. وَإِذْ زَيَّنَ لَهُمُ الشَّيْطَانِ. Now, I mention all these verses just to grasp that Allah says, at every moment of the battle, I was just looking after you. And in a way, you were not alone there. وَإِذْ زَيَّنَ لَهُمُ الشَّيْطَانُ عَمَلَ. And when Satan made their deeds pleasing to them and said, no one can overcome you today from among the people. Now this might be that Shaitan whispered to them that you are the mighty ones, they cannot defeat you. Or as there are in some hadith, Shaitan actually was visualized to them in the form of Suraqah ibn Malik. You remember Suraqah ibn Malik, the one who went to arrest Prophet when he had migrated, a very, very brave man from Kanana. And Quraysh had some battles, fights with Kanana. Now, this Suraqah ibn Malik, they said Shaitan appeared to them in the form of Suraqah ibn Malik and said, we are with you as well, Kanana. Don't fear Kanana, we are with you, I am with you, because this Suraqah, if he was in an army, the army was really, really guaranteed victory. So he said, I am with you, you cannot be defeated, let's go and fight. Now, whether this is true, or Shaitan whispered in their minds that there is no one who can defeat you today, and indeed I am your protector. Well, وَإِنِّي جَارٌ لَكُمْ. This, of course, looks like more the second version, that Suraqah ibn Malik said, I am protecting you. It means me and my tribe, which is Kanana, one of the most powerful tribes in the region, we are protecting you. فَلَمَّا تَرَاءَتِ الْفَأَتَانِ. And but when the two armies sighted each other, he turned on his heels and said, indeed I am dissociated from you. Indeed I see what you do not see. Indeed I fear Allah, and Allah is severe in penalty. Because Shaitan was seeing the angels who were there. And he decisively came to the knowledge that since the Jibreel and angels are there, that's the end of it. They cannot win. So he just turned away and ran away. If he was there, I mean, if he just stayed there for the battle, coming across one of those angels, great punishment and chastisement. And another incident. إِذْ يَقُولُ الْمُنَافِقُونَ وَالَّذِينَ فِي قُلُوبِهِمْ مَرَضٌ. When the hypocrites and those in whose heart was disease said their religion has deluded these people. Now, among these people who came from Mecca, there were some Muslims who had weak iman, that's why they had not migrated. But they came to see what happened. If anything, they joined the Prophet. After they saw this mighty army and those few people, they said, no, this shouldn't be a right religion. They are deceived by their faith. And Allah says, of course, they didn't know what's behind the scene. And then it continues, and it goes to what happened after Badr in Bani Qaynuqa that we come to, inshallah, and then the injunction that you have to create an army. وَأَعِدُّ لَهُمْ مَا اسْتَطَعْتُمْ مِنْ قُوَّةٍ. Verse number 60, and prepare against them whatever you are able of power, and of steeds of war by which you may terrify the enemy of Allah and your enemy, and other besides them whom you do not know. So this was the order that prepare an army, which of course they didn't have at that time, a prepared army. As I said, they went with two horses and just seven swords, so they didn't have a prepared army. The injunction comes that you have to prepare an army. And other injunctions, which came after the Battle of Badr. It's very interesting, I mean, to place all these injunctions in the context that it came. It makes everything more understandable, why these injunctions came at these times. Anyhow, as I said, 70 were killed from Mushrikun, 36 of whom were killed by Ali, and 70 others were captured. And 14 were killed from the Muslim side. After the Mushrikun were killed, 70, of course, it was very difficult to bury them, so they just dumped them in a well, and just closed the well by sand and mud and stone and these things. And the Prophet started to address those deaths. Maybe he just called them out. Abu Jahl, Saybah, Utbah, Umayyah, and all other people. هَلْ وَجَدْتُمْ مَا وَعَدَ رَبُّكُمْ حَقًّا. Did you find what your Lord had promised to be true? Indeed, I found what my Lord had promised to be true. And that was the promise of victory. And Prophet found it to be true. Did you find? So what their Lord had promised them, the angels receiving them with punishment and all these things, did you find it true? And evil people you were for your Prophet. You disproved me and other people approved me. You expelled me and other people gave me refuge. You fought against me and other people supported me. This is how the Prophet addressed those people. And the companions asked, why do you address the dead? Because they cannot hear. And Prophet said, no, by God, I swear that they hear me better than you hear me. The only thing is that they cannot answer me. You can answer, they cannot answer me. Now, it's very interesting because this has come in all books of history, almost, in most major books of history. But when, of course, we go to Ziyara and we say that we bear witness that you are alive, you hear whatever we say, you respond our salam, the only thing is that we cannot hear your salam, then they say you are mushrik, because you believe that these souls have this type of ability. Now, then there were 70 captives as well. Huge wealth, of course, and huge type of assets, because slaves were also always an asset. However, the Prophet had some misgivings right from the beginning. Why did these people take captives before he allowed them to do, he permits them? And then verses were revealed that you should not take captives until the Prophet or your commander allows you. Because when war is going on, you want to eliminate as much of enemy as you can. And if you start taking captives, then it means that you are not reaching the aim. And of course, taking captives was very beneficial. Lots of property, lots of wealth and assets. And Prophet somehow became angry, and Allah also rebukes Mu'minun. Why did you take captives before Prophet allowing you? And it says, ma kana lin nabiyyin, it is not deserving any Prophet to take captives before the war had eliminated enough enemies. And then therefore they couldn't touch the captives. Prophet said, I have to wait for an injunction from Allah to tell me what to do with these captives. I just leave them go, or you might have to kill them, I don't know. And then, of course, the revelation came that فَأَمَّا مَنَّمْ بَعْدُ وَأَمَّا فِدَاءً. Anyone who wants to release, just by grace, you do. If you want to take a ransom, take a ransom. And, of course, a couple of them were released just on grace. And one of them was Abu Azza. We'll come to this man who was a great poet. And Prophet told him, I release you, provided you do not make any poetry against us. And you support us. And he promised, he went, He came back to fight against the Prophet in Uhud, in instigating people to fight. And of course, their Prophet said, anyone you leave, Abu Azza should be killed in this battle. And of course, he was killed. Although the Mu'minun were defeated, but Abu Azza was killed in the battle. Now, two of these captives were executed. Now, you might say, why Prophet executed captives? Because they were very, very dangerous. Very lethal, so to speak, for Islam. One was Nadr ibn Haris, which about whom many verses are revealed in the Quran. وَمِنَ النَّاسِ مَنْ يَشْتَرِي لَهْوَ الْحَدِيثِ لَيُضِلَّ عَنْ سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ. And some of the people, they come and start talking about idle stories to deviate people from Sabilillah. لَهُمْ فِي الدُّنْيَا خِزْيٌ. In this world, they should be punished. And this is why Prophet actually punished him. And this man, you remember I said when Prophet spoke about the stories of Ad and Thamud, this man, after the Prophet left, he said, these stories are very old, I give you better stories of Rustam and Iskandiyar, Persian stories, Persian myths. He was very, of course, knowledgeable, a poet, and all these things. And usually these type of people are more dangerous, always, if they are in the enemy's camp. And Uqbat ibn Abi Mu'ayt as well, one of the staunchest enemies of Islam. These two people were executed. Others were freed by paying ransom, between 1,000 to 4,000 dirham, depending on their resources. And those who did not have money were freed on the condition of teaching the Ansar children reading and writing. Not many, of course there were not many, just those of whom who had the knowledge of reading and writing, who were literate, they were freed on that condition. So they stayed about a couple of months, three months in Medina, teaching the children, and some of them became Muslim actually, later on. Among the captives was Abu al-As ibn Rabi' and two sons of Abu Sufyan, Hanzala and Amr. One of them was killed, the other was captured. And Hanzala was killed, Amr was captured. One son of Abu Sufyan, Abu al-As ibn Rabi', who was the son-in-law of the Prophet, the husband of Zainab. Zainab was still in Medina, of course, because Abu al-As did not let her to migrate. Abu al-As himself was mushrik, and Zainab had married him before Islam, and he was cousin to Zainab, actually. Khadija was his maternal aunt, Abu al-As ibn Rabi, his maternal aunt. So they were close families, actually. Now, Abu al-As, Prophet said that, okay, everyone has given ransom, you have to bring ransom as well. Of course, the family should have sent ransom from Mecca to Medina. And one very interesting thing happened here, and that is Zainab prepared some money, and the money was short of the ransom value, and she put a necklace, which was given to her by Khadija. Somehow it was precious, and sent it to Medina. And Prophet, on just seeing that ransom, and especially the necklace of Khadija, started to cry. And then he said, I know how hard it has been for Zainab to send this necklace. So he said, would everyone agree that I free Abu al-As without ransom and send all these back? And of course, everyone said, yes, of course, is at your will. And of course, on the condition that he should send Zainab back, Zainab to Medina. On that condition, he was free. And of course, he fulfilled the condition. He went to Mecca. He hired someone to take Zainab to Medina. But you can imagine, these people in Mecca, they had lost their sons, they had lost their father, they had lost everything. And now how could they let Zainab just leave like that, in honor, of course, his husband sending him to Medina? So they did not allow her to go. And someone called Habbar ibn Aswad, when hearing that, became very angry, came out, attacked them, and attacked Zainab, actually. And Zainab was pregnant. And she somehow, because of that, had some miscarriage, and the child was lost. And of course, Abu al-As brought the Zainab back and said, I have promised, said to Abu Sufyan, I have promised. Abu Sufyan said, okay, let things calm down. Then you send her in night, not during the day you are sending her like that. And of course, she went back. She went to Medina. And of course, later on Abu al-As migrated to Medina after, of course, the
divorce.
Well,
I think earlier in our notes
there is
something about
Abu Lahab's son divorcing the other two daughters of the Prophet, not Zainab, no, because they were very close relatives actually. And of course, Prophet said she is not halal for you because she is a Muslim, you are a kafir, you have to send her to us. But afterwards, Abu al-As went to Medina and became a Muslim, and Prophet actually made them marry again. Anyhow, this. There is a nice story in Ibn Abi al-Hadid's interpretation of Nahjul Balagha. He says, I asked my teacher that what happened to Habbar when Prophet conquered Mecca? He said, everyone is, of course, is pardoned, except a few people who had done lots of, of course, evil things. One of them was Wahshi, who killed Hamza, which of course he later on find a tactic to save himself. The other one was this Habbar. And Ibn Abi al-Hadid says that I asked my teacher, if prophets had ordered that Habbar, who caused Zainab to have a miscarriage, to be killed in the conquest of Mecca, if he was alive, what would have he done for those who made Fatima to have the miscarriage of Muhsin? And, his teacher told him. And then he said that then I asked my teacher that do you really believe that this happened? He said, yes, it happened. And he said, can I report this from you? Of course, they were both Sunnis. He said, no, if you report this from me, I deny it. Do not report from me. But I know this happened, and was Prophet there seeing the miscarriage of Muhsin, and what type of attitude he would have had towards those people, as he had towards this Habbar ibn Aswad. Now, an interesting thing about Abu Sufyan. Abu Sufyan had Hanzala killed, one of his sons, who was son of Hind actually, and another son, Amr, captured. And when people were sending ransom to Medina, he said, I'm not going to send ransom. Let him say that. He said, why? He said, well, I have one son killed, and I should send money to Medina to just reward them for killing my son. I'm not going to do that. And maybe it was because he was miserly, just bringing pretext not to send ransom to Medina. However, he did a very evil thing, of course, because the Muslimun at that time were security to come for Hajj. And one of the old men of Medina, when he came to Hajj, he captured him. And he said, I wouldn't let you go unless my son Amr is released. And of course, the Prophet, peace be upon him, agreed with the swap of these two prisoners. Now, when the news of defeat reaches Mecca, it comes by Haythuman ibn Abdullah. He brings the news in a very gruesome way. He comes, he tears his dress, and he enters Mecca exactly in the same way as Atika had seen in her dream. And he says, Abu Jahl is killed, Umayyah is killed, Utbah is killed, Shaybah is killed, and Safwan, son of Umayyah, was sitting by Kaaba. And he laughed. He said, it's impossible. How is it possible that these people of Mecca? It means that whole Mecca is killed. And then he said, this man is mad. Just ask him, where is Safwan, son of Umayyah? And the man said, you are Safwan, son of Umayyah. I know, I'm not out of my mind. Wait, you will see the news is true. And then the whole news made everyone mad. Now, you remember I talked about Umayr ibn Wahab. Umayr ibn Wahab, the one who went round the camp of the Prophet to estimate their number. Now, Safwan once started to speak in this Omeyyad and said, look what has happened to us. We have lost everyone. And somehow encouraging this, Omeyyad said, I swear by God that if I didn't have so much debt and I was not fearing for my daughters, for my family who have no one, no shelter except through me, I would have gone and killed Muhammad. And Safwan, who was waiting for such an opportunity, he said, all your debt on me, I pay them. And your family, I will support. You go and kill Muhammad. And he said, okay, this is my wish. So he set out to Medina. He went to Medina, of course, not showing what he intended. And when the companions saw he was coming with a sword, they said, you can't see the Prophet with the sword. He said, I have come to confess Islam. They said that you cannot see the Prophet with the sword. Anyhow, they let him to go in, but Omar took the hilt of his sword. So that, because he was a very, very brave and very, very strong man. Then, actually, Prophet told them, let him come in. And they said, he's armed. He said, doesn't matter, let him come in. He went in and Prophet said, What has brought you to Medina? He said, I have come to confess Islam. The Prophet said, why with sword? He said, well, you know, what are the use of these swords? We had many of these swords in Badr. It didn't help us. It's not important for me to carry a sword anymore or not carrying it. The Prophet said, you are lying. He said, what? He said, did you not speak to Safwan about killing me? Did not come here? Did he not promise you to support your family? And he mentioned everything that they had very, of course, secretly talked to each other about it. And upon hearing this, he said, Ashhadu annaka Rasulullah. I witness you are Rasulullah. He became a Muslim. And Safwan was waiting day after day for a news from Medina that Prophet is assassinated by Umayr. And unfortunately the news came that Umayr has become a Muslim. And this was of course another blow to Safwan that such a thing happened. Another thing, Abu Lahab became so upset about the whole thing that he died after 7 days. Now, of course, they say that he was he contracted a sort of disease or something like that, but probably it was just due to the sort of sadness and sorrow that he felt, that he passed away after 7 days. Alhamdulillah. I mean, these were all the type of bonuses of the Battle of Badr coming one after the other. Now, Abu Sufyan hits back in his own way, of course. In his own way, in a cowardly way. What happened, after this happened, Abu Sufyan made an oath that he would not go to his wife, he would not wash, he would not do anything which somehow is comforting until he takes the revenge from Medina. Now, of course, for such a person making such an oath, he couldn't wait long. He should somehow hit back very quickly. And what he did, he took an army of about 200 men with himself, and he went towards Medina. And going to Medina, first he went to Banu Nazir. Of course, he went to Huwayyah ibn Akhtab, the head of Banu Nazir, but because that Banu Nazir had a pledge with the Prophet, they scared. They feared to let him in. He went to one other member of Banu Nazir, Salam ibn Mishkam, and Salam talked about everything, what has happened here, and hinted what he can do. What he did, he went just that night, went out of Salam's house with his troops. He raided some farms in Medina, killing about one or two people who were there, and setting fire to the poultry and these things, and they rushed back to Mecca just to somehow fulfill the pledge in a way, because this was nothing, of course. I mean, doing such a thing was just to show some sort of reaction. Now, of course, Prophet set out after him. He couldn't find him. He went until Qarqaratul Qadr outside Medina. He couldn't find them. He came back, and of course, he had fulfilled his pledge, and he came out of that restriction. This Qazwa, of course, was called Qazwat Sawiq. Sawiq is a sort of mixture of flour and sugar that usually the travelers at that time used to eat because they couldn't cook much and these things. It was a very nutritious type of food that they made. And usually you can imagine an army of 200 people, they carry lots of this sawiq with them. Now, on their way back, because they were very afraid of the Prophet coming after them, they wanted to make themselves as light as possible. So they just threw all these sawiq bags on the way. And when the Prophet was going after them, they collected all these sawiq and brought them to back to Medina. Maybe more precious than the palm trees which were set on fire. And, however, there was another reaction to this, we come to it. That, of course, comes in Shawwal. However, in Sha'ban of year 2, there was a marriage, another marriage, of the Prophet with Hafsa, daughter of Umar ibn al-Khattab, who had lost her husband in Badr. And her husband was Hunayth ibn Khudafa. And Umar actually didn't have that sort of means in Medina to support a widowed daughter. So he asked Abu Bakr and Uthman to marry Hafsa, they didn't. So he went and complained to the Prophet that this is my situation, these men have not married my daughter. And Prophet said, okay, I will marry her. Because he understood that this was the case. And of course, Hafsa was one of the most problematic wives of the Prophet, about whom verses are revealed. And actually, Prophet divorced her once. But again, Umar ibn Khattab interceded and Prophet did ruju to her. After the Battle of Badr, everyone had a different view now about what's going on. The whole political geography of the area changed. Because, of course, people thought that Muhammad has come to Medina, these are the same Aus and Khazraj, they have that limited power that they did, they cannot do much, especially the Jews, they thought they are in our hands, and they can't do anything without our consent. Even the Prophet cannot do much without our consent. However, now, after the Battle of Badr, the whole picture had changed. These were now the mighty people who had defeated the mighty Quraysh. And in that very unequal situation, so the Jews started to think, what are we doing here? It's becoming very dangerous. The first tribe who started to do some provocations were this Bani Qaynuqa. Bani Qaynuqa are those Jews from whom Abdullah ibn Salam, who became a Muslim, they had a very, very respected scholar, Abdullah ibn Salam. And one of the Jews who converted to Islam was this Abdullah ibn Salam from Bani Qaynuqa. And they were the bravest of all the Jews and were living on gems and jewelry. Unlike Banu Nazir and Bani Qurayza, they didn't have any land. They were casting gems and gold and living on that. And also they had lots and lots of weapons. So they were the strongest and bravest among all the tribes. Now, after Badr, they started suspicious trips to Mecca, encouraging the Meccans to avenge Badr. And they, in a way, started provocation in Medina as well. And Prophet warned them several times that we have a pledge, we have a pact, you should not violate that pact. And, of course, they don't care. They told Prophet that you think that we are like Quraysh? Quraysh are not familiar with the tactics of war. If you want to fight us, you will then know what is the meaning of fight, what's the meaning of battle. And they started to, in a way, stand against the Muhajirun and Ansar, challenging the Prophet. And even once the Prophet went to their market and he addressed them, that fear God, you know that I'm the Prophet of God. If you want to break your pledge, then there will be a fight between us. However, of course, they did not listen. Now, the Quran in Surah Al-Imran, in response to what they said about the might and the power that they had, قُلْ لِلَّذِينَ كَفَرُوا ستغلبون وتخشرون الى جهنم وبئس المآب. Say to those who disbelieve, you shall be vanquished and driven together to hell, and evil is the resting place. Is as a resting place. And then of course bring the example of the Battle of Badr. قَدْ كَانَ لَكُمْ آيَةً فِي فَأَتَيْنِ الْتَقَتَى فَأَةٌ تُقَاتِلُ فِي سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ. Indeed, there was a sign for you in the two hosts which met together in an encounter, one party fighting in the way of Allah and the other unbelieving, whom they saw twice as many as themselves with the sight of the eye. This is when I said that when the battle started, the mushrikun started to see the mu'minin twice as their number. Unlike at the beginning when they saw them little, when the battle started, then they saw, wow, these are large, huge people, how can we defeat them? So, this is an example for you, and Allah, of course, would strengthen with His aid whom He pleases. So, after these verses, still Bani Qaynuqa continues. Their provocation. Now, one other thing happened which completely broke the place. And that was, as I said, these were jewelers. And anyone who wanted to buy any jewelry in Medina, they went to Bani Qaynuqa. Now, one Muslim lady one day went to the market of Bani Qaynuqa to buy or sell some jewelry. And they insisted that you have to unveil. And of course, she was a Muslim. They just wanted to make radical of Muslims and the way they dress. So they insisted that you have to unveil. And she said, no, she wanted to go. One of them, in a way, tied the dress, her dress, the bottom of her dress to her scarf or something like that, with something. And when she stood up, her private parts were shown. So she became very embarrassed and she shouted, "Oh Muslims, come and help me." They wanted in a way to abuse her. And one of the Muslims who was passing by, he just went in and he killed the jeweler. And the Jews killed that Muslim. And that was of course a very, very clear breach of everything. I mean, treating Muslims in this way. And also the Quran was revealed to the Prophet, وَإِمَّا تَخَافَنَّ مِنْ قَوْمٍ خِيَانَةً فَأَنْبِذْ إِلَيْهِمْ عَلَى سَوَاءٍ إِنَّ اللَّهَ لَا يُحِبُّ الْخَائِنِينَ. And if you fear treachery on the part of a people, then throw back to them on terms of equality. Surely Allah does not love the treacherous. So you have to somehow somehow react. So the Prophet seized their castles. They had very fortified castles. For 15 days, after which they surrendered, they had 400 soldiers and 300 fully armored knights. As I said, they were among the most powerful Jew tribes in the area. And therefore, it was only Allah who threw fear in their hearts that they surrendered. Now, after they surrendered, they were khulafa of some other tribes in Medina. Khulafa means they had pledge of, in a way, a defense pact with each other, that if someone attacks me, you have to help me. If someone attacks you, I help you. Now, Ubadah ibn Samit, who was the head of Aws, and Abdullah ibn Ubay, who was going to become a leader, the head of Munafiqun, they were khulafa of Bani Qaynuqa. Now, Ubadah ibn Samit came to the Prophet and said, since they have broken pledge with you, it is as if they have broken pledge with me. And that's the end of it. I'm not going to support them. However, Abdullah ibn Ubay came to the Prophet and said, you have to release these people. Because Prophet, of course, made an agreement with them. That the men, if you surrender, the men are killed. The women and children can go. We do not take them captive. That's all. And because they were very, very insolent in the beginning, fighting against the Prophet in that way. And Abdullah ibn Ubay said, no, I don't let you to kill these men. These are people who have supported me. They will support us in future. We don't know what happened. We are scared of the, different tribulations of the time. And then Prophet, because of the insistence of Abdullah ibn Ubay, let all of them go. and they went to Syria, to Azra'at. They lived there for a while, and then they were extinguished. No one knows how. All Bani Qaynuqa were extinguished in Syria. Now, these verses were revealed in a way referring to Abdullah ibn Ubayy. يَا أَيُّهَا الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا لَا تَتَّخِذُوا الْيَهُودَ وَالنَّصَارَ أَوْلِيَاءَ بَعْضُهُمْ أَوْلِيَاءَ بَعْضُ. All you who believe, do not take the Jews and the Christians for friends. They are friends of each other, and whoever amongst you takes them for a friend, then surely he is one of them. Surely Allah does not guide unjust people. But you will see those in whose heart is a disease. This is Abdullah ibn Ubayy, hastening towards them, saying, we fear lest the calamity should befall us. This is what Abdullah ibn Ubayy said to Prophet. And it's very interesting. They say that Abdullah ibn Ubayy was very rude to the Prophet in that occasion. He, in a way, he said, you have to let them go. And Prophet said, no, they should be punished. And he took the Prophet by the collar and said, you have to let them go. And then Prophet became very angry and said, okay. He said to his companions, let them go with him. This is what he said, that fear lest a calamity should befall us. But it may be that Allah will bring the victory or a punishment from himself so that they shall be regretting on account of what they did, which it happened actually. Now, then we come to, there's no much incident in the second year. We come to Ghazwatu Uhud. However, there was a cause for this Ghazwatu Uhud, apart from avenging the Badr. After that Ghazwatu Sawiq, after Abu Sufyan actually came and raided some farms in Medina, Prophet ordered Zayd ibn Haritha to go and intercept the caravan, which had not now changed route. After Badr, they didn't send caravans from that route anymore. They sent it from the route of Iraq, going far away from Medina, actually east of Medina, and not from the shore, going to the to Syria. So Prophet sent Zayd ibn Haritha, and they took the caravan. The caravan was headed by Abu Sufyan. Abu Sufyan fled, and all the property of the caravan, which amounted about 100,000 dirham, big, huge money, which came to Medina, of course, from that caravan, in response to Ghazwatu Sawi. And this shows how foolish these people in Mecca were. They knew that this is somewhere that their caravan should pass by, and they did such silly things, coming and raiding farms in Medina and going back. So Prophet ordered that, and now they said that it's impossible that we can live after this. We have to go and secure the roads and the routes towards Syria, and that's why Ghazwatu Uhud took place, apart from the revenge that they wanted to take from Badr. Inshallah, we'll discuss this next week. Any questions? Yes,
please.
Who?
Abdullah ibn Ubayy.
Abdullah ibn Ubayy, they say he was, yes, they say that. No, you probably are talking about Ubayy ibn Ka'b. Not Abdullah ibn Ubayy, Ubayy ibn Ka'b, who was a very, of course, reliable companion of the Prophet. But Abdullah ibn Ubayy was literate, and sometimes he wrote the Quran as well, but he was the head of Munafiqun and Hypocrites. Okay, inshallah, see you next.